And you're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The show is Bathrop's, Pierre's, Broadside's. The topic, homeless civil rights. The specific topic, the sleeping van. You're listening to a replay of clips from the Voices from the Village live show on the issue of the sleeping van, a debate between Mayor Ryan Coonerty, Don Zimmerman, and Kate Wells, the two other attorneys who oppose the sleeping ban, whereas Coonerty supports it. You aren't hearing the other two because I do so much pro ending the sleeping ban talk on my show that I think it's kind of superfluous to have them go on about it, too. And frankly, they sometimes get their facts wrong. But I think we do need to know what Mayor Ryan Coonerty has to say. He's the guy with the political power. So I'm going to try to go back and make some comments about it as we go through it. And then also, I'll invite you to call in. And if you want to make comments and responses, you can as well. Be patient. The phone will ring for a while before it gets answered.
Site services, county too. The city of Santa Cruz spends millions of dollars every year and provides tens of thousands of shelter days of beds over the course of the year. And I think because we're trying to address the problem, unfortunately, a terrible problem that I'm not sure any city can fix. I think it's a national problem.
And this is frequently said by Rotkin, whose arguments Coonerty echoes. It's a national problem. It certainly is. Shelter and housing and rents are a national problem. One can't take local action. You can take rent control and rent stabilization. Santa Cruz council members have refused to take up this issue or do it. They're so afraid of the real estate lobby and real estate interests and so concerned about their political careers and so forth. You know, even somebody like Tony Madrigal, the big rent control guy, hasn't put the issue on the city council agenda. Shelters are pretty miserable places, but you know, if it's better to have some shelter than no shelter in theory, but if you don't have it, you do not arrest people for doing what they need to do at night. This is the basic issue that Coonerty refuses to address. He simply won't do it. And there's a reason he won't, because he can't really address it. I mean, you have to say, essentially, fuck the homeless, they can go get the fuck somewhere else. You know, and our police will arrest them, it's a hideout or get out. You know, if you're going to claim that you have the right to arrest a person even though they have no alternatives. And that's what he's saying. And that's what he has said for the 3 years of his incumbency, although he puts it differently. He uses a number of different, we've got wonderful social services, you know. We have all these wonderful things. We have a homeless resource officer. We have a mental health worker downtown. What he doesn't tell you is that none of these things has anything to do with providing shelter for homeless people at night or leaving them alone to provide their own shelter somewhere. Not everywhere, not anywhere, but somewhere. So he keeps ducking and avoiding this issue and distracting you with this other stuff, which is not particularly relevant when Kate Wells brings up the issue that it's the most, the meanest city, according to, she calls it the National Coalition for the Homeless. It's actually the National Law Center, I believe, for Homelessness and Poverty. Maybe both of them put out this information. They're actually referring to not just the fact that there's no shelter, and that there's the worst sleeping ban around that you can see, because it also includes private property as well as public property, but because there's also a whole bunch of other anti-homeless laws that have to do with sitting down downtown, it has to do with peacefully asking or even holding up a sign seeking spare change, forbidden zones all along the river and in the parks at night, a whole set of permit parking rules that make not just sleeping in your vehicle but even parking a vehicle after a certain hour of the night illegal, specifically focusing on homeless people, massive amounts of money being given to the police and parks and rec to deliberately go after homeless people and drive them out of areas that are trying to survive in and bothering nobody, like the Poganip and the parks. Coonerty claims that, you know, oh, where can we put them? Where can they go? Well, we've got a huge amount of green belt space. You can set up a couple of campgrounds. It's been proposed for decades. And as I've told one caller who keeps calling in and saying he can't seem to find news about Dignity Village or Tent City 4 in Seattle, Dignity Village is in Portland, Oregon, you know, or the Fresno authorities' response to New Jack City, which is a homeless-run encampment under the freeway, but one which is supported, but porta-potties and dumpsters by the city. We're talking about recognizing life as it is. the reality of things as they are. And while you're looking for changes, you don't criminalize people for doing what they need to do. And that, you know, is something that those three cities have at least recognized, mainly under court order. I believe not in Seattle, but certainly in Portland in the Wicks decision of 2000, which found their camping ordinance unconstitutional, and the Jones decision in Los Angeles, which found that, you know, essentially it meant the elimination of police harassment at night for sleeping, specifically under the code sections for sleeping in Los Angeles and San Diego, and also in Richmond, but not in Santa Cruz, mind you, not in Santa Cruz. See, Santa Cruz is too enlightened. We get to harass because we have enlightened police officers who can walk around enlightening all the homeless people about the non-existent constitution, which doesn't really guarantee their right from cruel and unusual punishment. I get stuck in sarcasm here because, frankly, it's one of the few defenses I have. I luckily don't sleep outside, but as you heard from earlier callers, there are plenty of people who do. The wonderful social services that Coonerty talks about, and some of them, you know, are a step in the right direction, but they serve a fraction of homeless people. And his claim that, oh, you know, we don't have to provide the services for everybody, and I appreciate that, you know, although I don't think it'll be that hard to provide campgrounds, frankly. If you're not going to provide them, you don't criminalize people for doing what they need to do. And that's what the courts are essentially going to tell him eventually. Even though he's a lawyer, supposedly a constitutional lawyer, that's what he teaches classes in up at UCSC in Cabrillo, and he should know better. But you see, politics has warped him. And I don't say that to try to be mean to him or to castigate him as an individual, but this is what happens to people who enter the Santa Cruz political system without a really, really clear sense of their principles on this issue. And that, it's not rare. He's not some sort of weird, perverted guy. No, you know, he's a businessman with probably some liberal leanings who realized, like the local ACLU, you got to trim your liberalism in Santa Cruz if you want to please some of the power brokers here. I think that's what happened. Continue with this tape, and my apologies for kind of in the middle, and I'm going to be kind of commenting on it fragmentarily because of my inability to work the CD MP3 player, or maybe it just doesn't allow for this kind of skipping back.
It has to be dealt with at the national and state level. So specifically, can you talk about the specifics of the law? What does it say? What does the ordinance say, and what are the penalties provided for in the ordinance?
Yeah, the ordinance says that you can't sleep can't camp or sleep outside. I believe after dark.
No, it's after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And you might say, well, that's sort of the same, isn't it? And the answer is, well, not really. In a way, the law is more liberal than what Coonerty suggests. It's not after dark, though. There is such a provision up at UCSC, where they have their own camping ordinance, which makes it illegal to sleep after dark. Maybe Coonerty's mistaking that law, but here's the guy who's the mayor of the city who has been confronted with this issue repeatedly by us, but he hasn't even read the law carefully enough to know exactly what it says. That tells you where it exists in his scheme of priorities.
I think it's a $60 ticket, Matt.
No, it's not a $60 ticket. It's a $20 ticket that becomes a $97 ticket with court fees.
Through the trial process, the courts can add on additional fees. It is waived if the shelters are full.
And that's not true. It is only waived in the winter if the armory is full. That's the part of the law that passed again in 1999 where the law was changed, contrary to his belief, and that allowed for, if the armory is full, they can ticket you, they can harass you, they can drive you on, they can confiscate your property, they can arrest you, but later on, the city attorney will dismiss the tickets if the armory is full. And what happened last year was, first of all, Ed Porter insisted the armory was only full 3 nights per year. He was corrected by Ken Cole, who said, no, it was more like, it turned out to be like 14 nights. A lot of people can't use the armory for other reasons, but for many months, people did not get their tickets corrected. They went to, you know, collection, which means your credit is ruined at least, and may mean you get arrested later on a warrant. not entirely clear what happens with this. So again, we're talking about people who run the city, who have significant power, who are a voice for the city, who have no understanding of what's really going on, and are inaccurate in their facts.
The tickets rendered invalid or whatever. So it's only when the shelters, when there's room in the shelters and the tickets issued, are anywhere between 30 and 60 of these tickets issued in a given month.
Okay, not true. There are 60 to 80 tickets issued per month. If you count only the police department tickets, but if you add parks and rec, probably goes up to around 100 per month. And you might say, well, I mean, that's how many people sleeping out every night, 1,500 to 2,000, 30 nights a month. That's not very many to have sleeping ban tickets issued. But most of the time, the cops don't issue tickets. They just invade your privacy, ID check you, wake you up at midnight, harass you, and move you on even without a complaint. They do it to train the rookies. They do it because they're deciding to do it. They do it. It's not clear why they do it. The claim that they do it only on complaint is just not the case, because they won't. They frequently they're honest about it. They say no, we're just it's illegal. And other times they won't tell you who the complainant is. And most of the time there is no such discussion. Fact of the matter is that his numbers are wrong, and the impact of giving sleeping ban tickets extends far beyond the actual number of tickets issued. It's really a statement, you don't have the basic right that everybody else has, which is to fall asleep at night legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. So get the hell out or hide out very carefully. And for people who are disabled, for people who have mental illness designations or otherwise have problems, for people who have drug and alcohol problems, and for people who are just, you know, been abused, can kicked out of their houses, runaways. For people who are older, these are not the easiest thing to do. Some people can do it successfully, and they brag about it, you know, quietly when I talk to them. They say, these new kids, they don't know what to do. They don't camp properly. But it's not the people who may have the messy campsites necessarily. It's the people who get seen. And that, the issue fundamentally is, should a police officer be able to come up to a poor person and say, you have no right to be here on public property, even though you have nowhere else to go? And the answer has to be, for me, no. For Mayor Coonerty, apparently the answer is yes. That's the problem.
So about one or two a night.
30 to 60 a month.
You were named to the top.
And while he says there are one or two a night, I got a report last week that there were 17 tickets issued on the wharf. Now, I haven't made a Public Records Act request. That could be an exaggeration. And I have found that I think there were 324 or 350 somewhere around there tickets issued, at least by the police department records that they gave us, by their matrix. I didn't look at each individual citation. I was not allowed access to the actual records. Police don't let you do that. And they charge you for looking at this stuff, which is another example of illegal and abusive behavior by a city agency, specifically the police department, specifically the agency that gave us the sleeping ban, frankly, to aggrandize their own power so that they could deal with a problem as they saw it, the problem of the counterculture, the problem of poor and homeless people, the problem of people who don't have sufficient status or standing in their eyes to merit basic human rights. And that's not because the police officers are worse people than anybody else as individuals. No. That is because the police department mentality, the police state mentality, says you treat everybody as a possible suspect. And they're guilty until proven innocent for police officers, not the other way around. Or guilty until proven wealthy, as I like to say. And that's the way police departments operate. That's how they view you. But that's not how the Constitution operates. That's not how the community should operate. And that, unfortunately, is what we're stuck with Santa Cruz and the sleeping ban. We have a mayor who essentially operates that way, too, Mayor Ryan Coonerty. If you want to talk to him about it, come to the Bookshop Santa Cruz 2 o'clock today, where we're going to be playing this entire thing on video. I should say the clip section on video. if somebody really has a demand for it, we'll play the whole damn thing. And if Charlie Phillips wants to come down and narrate, maybe we can do that. He's the guy who put this together, which I thank him for doing that. I was a little surprised that he called in demanding we not play the clips, but hopefully he understands by now what we're doing.
Seen meanest cities in the United States 2 years running in the last, let's see, one, I think it was 2003, 2004, maybe 2002, 2003. In the United States.
And who made this determination, and what are the criteria?
This is the National Coalition on Homelessness.
Sorry, I wrote a letter because I think it was the height of Washington, D.C. arrogance to have an attorney sit in Washington, D.C., look over laws, and then determine, make up this list without ever calling, without ever asking. The city of Santa Cruz spends millions of dollars every year on...
Now we're going to stop for a minute. Ryan Kennedy is talking about a letter that he and Rotkin sent off, which really had to do with the parking lot law that Kennedy was pushing, the law that makes it illegal to walk into a parking lot. And that, and a year ago, it was a parking garage. They couldn't get the parking lot part of it passed then, but it has since been passed, so they've removed 10 square blocks of public space, as I said earlier, unless you're parking your vehicle. And even then, got to be gone in 15 minutes. Don't wait for your mom. Don't hang up. Don't try to... do your laptop in your car for a while, that's illegal. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's an example of, you know, lining everybody up at a metal detector for hours on end because of fears about what might happen. Fears of what might happen. It's the police state stuff. But what he also was talking about is that the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty and National Coalition for the Homeless came up with a list of cities that have repressive laws, and Santa Cruz made the top 10. Top 10 meanest cities. Kennedy's saying he's outraged by this because of all the money that is spent on homeless services. And in a way, it's kind of, he's cutting his own throat with this argument, because with all the money spent on homeless services, you can't even get emergency walk-in shelter, even a campground, for more than 5% of the homeless population. It's an incredible testament to the insufficiency, the waste that you see in the kind of funding that goes to homeless services in our city. And he also makes a number of statements, which I will try to correct. And I'm not really a big expert on homeless services in Santa Cruz. I apologize for this, but I want to be, you know, full disclosure here. There are others who work with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, who really have this as an area of expertise. Becky Johnson has been working on this part of it for 12, 15 years. Linda LeMaster was head of the Homeless Issues Task Force and is still working with the what was called the Continuum of Care. I guess it's now the 10-year program to provide perks for poverty pimps. I don't know if it's what they call themselves. That's the Bushies program to say, oh, yeah, we're working with the hardcore homeless. You know. Anyway, there are others who know more about this, but I do know something. I take a lot of my information from them and from statistics from the Community Action Board, the Shelter Project, census figures done by various surveys here in Santa Cruz. Here's Ryan Coonerty talking about the great social services we have in Santa Cruz.
A variety of homeless programs, from the Reveille Shelter to the River Street Shelter. We just built new transitional housing on Barson Street. We have the mental health shelter on Cayuga. Or mental health, transitional housing on Cayuga.
Transitional housing is not a shelter. In order to get into transitional housing, you have to meet all kinds of criteria. Similarly with all these other programs, Reveille Family Shelters, this big $5 million shelter, sits on the corner of Coral Street and Highway 9. But it, you know, and it was built mostly with private funds, but the city contributed something, I'm sure. And it serves, 29 families once you get in there. And that's nice for some folks. Similarly with the Page Smith Community House, 50 people with transitional housing. Similarly with River Street Shelter, 20 or 30 people, transitional one-month housing. But for emergency drop-in shelter, for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in this community, there is only the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is ending, and instead they're cramming people into the Homeless Service Center. And that hasn't happened yet, but it's about to happen. And the Armory program in the winter. That means 160 people can be accommodated in the winter and about 40 people in the summer, maybe 60 with the increased shelter space. That's out of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. That's outrageous for Coonerty to start throwing up all these diversions, claiming, oh, look, see how compassionate we are. They don't address the issue. Instead, they spend their money on the police force and the parks and recs and rangers to go out and arrest people, ticket people. They throw people into the courts. That's the most common answer to this issue. Laws that criminalize the poor. And I want to be accurate about this. I suppose if you consider only the citations issued, assuming there are 100 or more, 100 or so citations issued a month, more people are served by the services, not for emergency shelter, but for transitional housing and the programs that Coonerty mentions, by a factor of 2, maybe 200, 300 people are served, than are arrested. But a huger number are driven away, made to sleep unsafely, can't sleep in groups, can't protect themselves with tents or bedding, are not allowed to cover up after 11 o'clock at night, and if they fall asleep, they're subject to a $97 citation. I mean, to me, that doesn't wash. It's not the kind of argument that Coonerty can righteously stand on and say, see, we're not mean because we have all these other services that don't deal with the issue.
We bus people to the armory. We have an interfaith housing program.
And I've talked about that. That's 5% of the people get those services.
City refunds churches to open up their mental health network. And so to look at this one narrow aspect, I take great exception because I think...
It's hardly one narrow aspect when you're talking about shelter at night. We're talking about people who are being criminalized for making their own shelter, sleeping together safely, or trying to find a place to hide and sleep, or they're doing nothing else wrong, nothing wrong at all, in fact. I mean, I continue to think we should consider the Golder solution. John Golder proposed a law that I think conservative members of the community could get behind, which says if you are sleeping at night on public property, you can't be ticketed unless, A, you're violating other laws, or, B, there is litter or feces or some kind of despoiling of the environment nearby within a, I don't know, 10-yard radius or 20-yard radius or 10-foot radius. That would mean that people would have to virtually clean up the environment before they could sleep there, and they would have to be careful to keep it clean. And that would mean that all the other problems associated with camping would have to be addressed by the campers, or they would be responsible for them, and they could be legitimately ticketed. To me, that I found that a brilliant response. Other people don't think it's so brilliant because they see, I talk to attorneys, they say to me, well, you know, how can somebody's wandering in late at night if they're disabled, they're supposed to be responsible for what somebody else did before? That doesn't sound fair. And I agree, it's not fair, but it's sure a hell of a lot fairer than what we've got now. I think it's a much better idea. And it's, you know, it's a law that could be passed. You know, they've had an emergency law that Coonerty brought up that would allow for a discussion of a task force, which I guess didn't even get a second, but that was talked about for the LBAM spraying thing. That a task force, thank you very much. But they can't give an emergency to a bunch of real, a situation of real crisis where you have a homeless death rate that is significantly higher than that in the population, and an assault and violence rate that's four to ten times higher, according to the police department's own statistics from 1999 here in Santa Cruz.
People in Santa Cruz have done a fantastic job of supporting services when, again, it's cities and not it's counties, not cities that provide these services.
And again, Mayor Coonerty is, first of all, he's not accurate. Santa Monica and San Francisco spend significantly more per capita than Santa Cruz, according to studies done by former Mayor Celia Scott, one of the two mayors who consistently opposed the sleeping ban. The other one was Bruce Van Allen, although I don't know how consistent he was. It was way back in the early 80s when he was mayor. and he hasn't done shit about it since, so I don't know what his deal is. Celia Scott, for that matter, has kept a pretty low profile since she left her mayorship in 1998. But, let's hear a little more.
And then pick any city within a 40-mile, 50-mile radius of Santa Cruz. Los Gatos' record, Monterey's record, Salinas' record, pick Watsonville, Scott Valley. I can't think of any other city that has more programs in order to help people who are in need.
And that's not the issue, whether you have programs to help people in need. It's nice if you do. I'm glad you do. But the real issue is, do you arrest people for doing what they need to do, or they have no choice but to do every night? And Santa Cruz does. What about that, Mayor Coonerty?
Santa Cruz, and we should be proud of that.
Okay, thank you. Services. Santa Cruz, you're saying, provides an extraordinary amount of services that the law provides, right? And so according to this, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the organization.
National Coalition on Homelessness.
Okay. According to this, when they're just looking at the laws on the books, they determine that Santa Cruz is a medieval city.
Well, I have two questions about that, and maybe Council Member one is, what is the operative effect of this during all the months of the year when the armory isn't even operating? Second, why is it necessary to have the police issue a citation only to be later dismissed by the city attorney when there's a much more direct approach? Let's take the city of Richmond. I think the city of Richmond's about a comparable size to Santa Cruz, north of San Francisco. And their prohibition says that they prohibit sleeping, camping in certain public areas unless, A, the person is informed of the whereabouts of homeless shelters in the city of Richmond, B, such shelter is actually available to such person, and C, such person willingly refuses to stay in such shelter. I think from an ACLU standpoint, that is a reasonable protection, and I'd like to ask Mr. Coonerty why that approach, which is more direct, it tells the police what they should do and what they shouldn't do, is not appropriate for Santa Cruz.
And you're going to hear Coonerty's answer in just a moment. However, it looks like we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. No, apparently the caller wants to talk off air. I interrupt this again to clarify. There are two questions being asked by Don Zimmerman. One is, what about during the other 8 months of the year when there's no provision to dismiss tickets if the shelters are full? It's only if the winter armory shelter is full. If you look at the camping ordinance 6.36.055, that's the provision of the ordinance that says if there's tickets in the winter, the city attorney shall dismiss them if the armory is full. And what you have there is, I see a caller calling in again, but you don't have a provision that will dismiss them during the summer. The first question is to Mayor Coonerty, why don't, you know, there's no provision for dismissing tickets if the shelters are full during the rest of the month. And the second question is, why not do what Richmond does, which just says if there's no shelter available, cops don't give people tickets? Why force people to go to the city attorney to get their tickets dismissed? It's kind of a burdensome on poor people to do that. You might even say it's cruel and unusual punishment for cops to issue tickets when they know the tickets are going to be dismissed. Cops can find out if the shelter is full, and they don't give tickets. It could be a relatively simple matter. We don't have that in Santa Cruz.
Well, I'll let somebody who's an expert in this, who's out there giving tickets, talk about it. But
however, there is nobody who's an expert giving tickets in the studio, so nobody talks about it. Instead, he talks about essentially something else.
I do think I would say that this is another area where you look at the bright law on the paper, and then you look at what's in practice. The city of Santa Cruz has a homeless resource officer whose job it is to go out and connect people to services.
Irrelevant. Homeless resource officer who more than not often gives people citations. That's Officer Seeley. does not have access to any kind of shelter more than the shelter that is available at night, which is to say 160 for spaces in the winter and 40 spaces the rest of the year for 1,500 to 2,000 people.
Social worker, whose job it is.
Social worker, downtown, another diversion. There's no shelter for her to send people to.
Connect people to services. We have downtown hosts who also connect people to services.
Downtown hosts who give people tickets for sitting on the sidewalk, or should we say, snitch to the police to do that. They have no services to send people to in terms of shelter. This is another bogus statement by Mayor Coonerty.
And so we have people making that available, and we have another mechanism.
People making what available? Not additional shelter, and that's the issue of the sleeping ban, because the sleeping ban says you'll get a ticket for sleeping on public property, no matter where you are. There's no sanctuary for you, and we only provide sanctuary for 5% of the population, but we'll arrest you or ticket you anyway. That's what he is saying.
And for dismissing the ticket.
Actually, it's not what he's saying, but that's what they're doing. And his defense of it is to say, we have all these other things which are not relevant to the issue.
So in the end of the day, would I rather be homeless in Richmond or rather be homeless in Santa Cruz? I would say that if you have a homeless resource officer who's there and offering you, not only just telling you about available services, but offering to take you there. And
that is, I have to say, the most naive statement I've heard from him throughout this, offering to take you there. If you want to go to the armory at night, and when the officer gives you a sleeping ticket, he won't give you a ride up there. Even if it's Officer Seeley, he won't give you a ride up there. What I've told people to do when they get a sleeping ticket is say to the officer, can you give me a legal place to sleep and transport me there? And the answer is always. I've heard of no case where a police officer, including Officer Seeley, has said, yeah, I'll take you up to the armory, I'll take you to a shelter. They don't do that. Not only do the police not do that, the shelter system doesn't do that. Unless you're in line at 3:30, unless you happen to have a place, unless you meet the criteria, unless you have your ID card, unless you happen to fit into that small segment, you don't get a shelter. If you're in a wheelchair, you don't get to go. I found that out at the Homeless Service Center day before yesterday. Two people in wheelchairs were turned down for a place to stay because, quote, you have a wheelchair.
With the support you need, I think it's better to be in Santa Cruz. So it may be cleaner on the law, written in law, but in practice, I think it's more humane in Santa Cruz.
So he's saying it's more humane in Santa Cruz than in Richmond, even though Richmond will not give you tickets for sleeping. I got to say, candidly, I've been trying to get information about Richmond other than the actual wording of their law, and I've not been very successful. So I'm not going to speak out of ignorance. It's a larger city. It's more... racism may be showing here. It's more African American in color. It may have lower income, higher rate of unemployment. I don't have all the details. So in many respects, who knows? He may be right about the services in Richmond in terms of, I don't know, homeless persons health project. Santa Cruz has a lot of token projects for homeless people. And they do also have some projects that are more than token, like phone service. If you get a voicemail service, anyway, that Paul Brindell's shelter project helps provide. And lockers for many people, though not for all people who want to get them. And a mail service. These are services that are available more broadly, almost you might even say universally to homeless people here. And I commend Santa Cruz City for supporting them, but they are not the shelter that would allow them to even begin to consider arresting someone for sleeping at night. Not that a shelter is, you know, there's an argument can be made, even if there's a shelter, you shouldn't arrest people for sleeping at night because of the shelter conditions are wretched and, you know, you're denying people's liberty, provided they're not doing anything else wrong, you know, provided they're not trespassing, provided they're not despoiling the environment or blocking the sidewalk, why are you arresting them for sleeping? You know, the claim, oh, this is an upscale area, we have a right to maintain the quality of life, we've got a right to keep the hotel profits high. We don't want to see, you know, trash trailer people on the streets and in their vehicles. You know, there's an issue that's deeper than the issue of whether there's a shelter bed available, and that's an issue we're going to have to confront in the months and years ahead. But right now, the issue is really pretty clear. If there's no shelter available, you don't tell somebody. You've decided you're a second class, you're only a dog citizen. Even dogs can't be treated this way. There's a lot more money spent on animal shelters than there is on human shelters, I can tell you that. And I tried to take the SPCA to task for that, and the woman became scandalized when we talked about that on TV.
I'd like to bring up an issue. If it's
Attorney Kate Wells,
so magnanimous in their support of the homeless. The proof to me is in the pudding. Okay, we have somewhere around, I mean, it's really tough to tie down the number of homeless to a specific amount. They're saying that generally it's about 3% of the population, which would mean it's somewhere around 1,500 homeless. How many shelter beds do we have in any one night? Right now, I don't know, is the armory open yet? No, the armory's not open. So we only have about 150, I believe, beds available.
And actually, she's wrong. There's 40 spaces in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. If you talk to Ken Cole, he'll tell you maybe in Carota's place, if you're lucky, you can, but the only real clear emergency drop-in, walk-in program is the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and in the year-round and the armory during the winter.
1,500 people. No matter how you want to cut this in terms of how wonderful we are and with all of these outreach people, when it comes right down to it, people have nowhere to sleep other than in the public. So set aside a place. Even L.A. before the lawsuit had parks that were open for sleeping. Criminalization of homelessness.
I remind people that Los Angeles has made a settlement after the federal courts ruled it was cruel and unusual punishment that people will be allowed to sleep between the hours of 9 and 6 in the morning on any sidewalk, provided they are not blocking the sidewalk or within 10 feet of a business until 1,200 units of housing are built. The caveat to that is this was a settlement apparently that had to do with the enforcement of the particular ordinance in Los Angeles. We've heard reports they're now trying to use a different ordinance to do this, and they're going to have to be sued again. I haven't got all the details on this, and it's rather depressing. But the fact is that under the legal settlement, and they may be now vulnerable, they have to stop arresting people for sleeping at night. Similarly, in San Diego, they did a similar settlement called the Spencer Settlement, based on one of the names of the defendants, Spencer, or plaintiffs, I should say, people who sued the city, homeless people. As been mentioned before, Richmond is a city that's changed its law, and as I've said, Fresno is a town which has stopped trying to pass an anti-camping ordinance, last I heard, because they're concerned about this. Even though the Jones decision is no longer precedent, the decision in Los Angeles that said you can't arrest people as cruel and unusual punishment, it became a settlement only local to the Los Angeles area instead of a precedent over 9 states. It still happened and broke new ground, and it's something that cities are worried about, but apparently not liberal Santa Cruz, because, see, I don't know why. I'm making sarcastic comments about it. I know that, I guess, they feel that we'll never get this lawsuit filed, or if we do, they're going to give Barisoni tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, John Barisoni, our city attorney, to fight it, because that's how they want to spend their money, rather than, let's say, opening up a campground on 1 or 2 acres in a green belt somewhere.
Public policy. It's just, imposing punishment for unavoidable activity is not only futile, because it's still going to go on, but it's inhumane.
Okay, I'm going to, before you respond, and sure. I know we have a lot to talk about. Brian, you were about to say something.
Well, I want to say I agree. I think that having people not have shelter is a failure of basic human rights. The issue is, how do you implement it? So when the city is required to provide 0 beds, and we require 250 beds during the winter.
The city does not provide 250 beds. It provides 160 beds, mats, cots, what you will.
And 150 beds, as you correctly say, during the other months, as well as transitional.
It doesn't provide 150 beds during other months. It provides space for 40 people.
As well as motel vouchers and that sort of thing. Is that enough? How much?
motel vouchers if you're ill and coming out of the hospital in some cases. Not apparently if you're in a wheelchair, or at least not for these two people I talked to.
For the city that's required, that's not, doesn't have, isn't given any money by the federal government, isn't given any money by the state government in order to provide homeless services, how much more do we come up with?
And again, this is a diversion, and also it's kind of disingenuous because the amount of money required to set up a campground is a fraction of what will be required for a large shelter program. But Coonerty rejects this out of hand, doesn't consider it. And the real issue is not even setting up a campground for shelter, but saying, you know, keep a low profile, don't violate any laws, clean up the area you're in, and you won't get a citation, and we won't make it legal, it won't be illegal, and you will, you know, we'll overturn this law that makes it criminal to sleep at night. Instead, we'll implement something that says if you actually engage in crime, you'll get a ticket. Coonerty won't do that, and he's not talking about that. Instead, he turns the issue back to how all the money Santa Cruz is spending and all it would have to spend if we were to provide shelters for everyone, which is not the issue being raised.
Why is only the city of Santa Cruz left to solve the problem? And the other part is, where do they sleep? So, okay, so you don't want to sleep on the beach. People sleep on the beach because then people are just camping out during the summer. You don't want people camping out in parks along streets and neighborhoods. There's been task force on task force that's looked for somebody, places for people to sleep. We've come up with the armory that we pay to rent every month. But this is all, again, this is money that's given.
The implication here is that there's no place to sleep. It's not true that task force after task force has been gone out to look for it. I think that happened on one occasion when Catherine Byers and Mayor Celia Scott during the mid-90s spent 9 months running around eliminating all places because there were complaints from different people. If all places where there were complaints from different people were eliminated for, let's say, drug and alcohol programs or shelter programs or, mental health programs, there wouldn't be any programs because there's always going to be someone who's going to object. The question is it a social priority to allow people legal places to sleep somewhere? And does it create, you know, more problems than it solves? And the answer, I believe, is no. The answer is we have to see by doing it and doing it in a reasonable way, you know, setting up various areas where people could go to. They wouldn't all be crammed into one particular spot. They'd have some choices. It would be funded, you know, reasonably. Campgrounds are not that expensive to run. And indeed, homeless people could contribute to the funding. But that is not even considered. That is not even discussed. That is not even just on the table. It's not even being thought about.
People of Santa Cruz care, and because they want to do something, it's not required. The county government is the function, the state government, the federal government. So we go out of our way. And the last part is...
So his claim is that Santa Cruz City goes out of its way because it's not required to do so, but it does some things anyway, which are in this pittance of shelter, 40 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 people in the summer and 160 in the winter, as though that was some great deal. It's actually a way of avoiding even more lawsuits. You got to have some kind of shelter in theory. It's also a way of avoiding, you know, looking extremely bad before a student constituency. You can always hold us up, see, we got this, and in the somewhat deceptive manner that Coonerty is doing. And again, the issue, though, is not, again, providing shelter for everybody all the time, but saying that if it isn't there, you don't arrest people, or cite people for doing what they need to do, unless they're doing something criminal. It's really criminal. An issue Coonerty will not discuss.
The argument I made from the beginning is that you need to maintain public support for homeless programs. And if you have either you lose the economic vitality of downtown, or you have people camping in neighborhood parks or on their streets, then I think you lose...
Again, deceptive. Camping on parks or in streets, Mayor Coonerty says, well, no, there's plenty of places that are in industrial areas, that are in areas pretty far away from residences, that where people could have a legal campground or legal campgrounds to go. So that's bogus. you're listening to this debate here, or actually the Coonerty sections of the debate, since you want to know what the mayor's position is. And this is going to be replayed at 2 o'clock downtown on the sidewalk. We're going to be in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz where Mayor Coonerty works at his family business. And hopefully he'll be able to respond to some of these concerns directly.
The public support to spend millions of dollars a year that can otherwise be spent on parks and rec programs, could be spent on road repair, could be spent on city workers, could be spent on any number of things that the city people in Santa Cruz and their elected officials believe in supporting our homeless population. So I think it's...
What he's saying here is that if people were allowed to sleep legally somewhere, this would somehow jeopardize all this other funding, which is actually being spent on homeless people, and it would go back to these other programs, potholes and city workers and so forth. That's another good reason why we shouldn't pay any attention to basic homeless needs or shelter, because, or to ending the sleeping ban, because that would antagonize the community. I happen to think it would antagonize a part of the community. Another part of the community, I think, would recognize Santa Cruz as taking a very progressive stance, and a humane one, and a long overdue one.
Perfect solution, but it is a solid effort by the city of Santa Cruz.
To say that getting 40 to 160 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 people is a solid effort is a solid lie.
Hello?
Yes, please.
Awesome. I was appalled by this recent Applemont spring civil rights implication, particularly as it applies to the homeless people. The state said that they would notify the homeless shelters, so therefore... homeless people would be,
caller, Fred Geiger,
be notified so they wouldn't be sprayed. And I'm just hoping perhaps a class action suit or something. I'm interested in you're all three lawyers, their opinion. This is like a total violation of people's civil rights. If you shouldn't be sprayed, and if you don't have a home, you get sprayed. And it's bad enough you're supposed to close your windows and hold your breath. But I'm interested in some comments on that from your panel there.
So he's referring to the Light Brown Apple Moss Spraying Program, which is the California Department of Food and Agriculture, I believe.
And this is this caller is really trying to, raise the issue of LBAM, not on the homeless front particularly, but generally. I tried to raise it on the homeless front by bringing it to Tony Madrigal, who was down on the sidewalk, giving out gauze masks and making speeches. But when confronted with the question, before they start spraying, this is before they sprayed in November, are you willing to, bring an emergency resolution for the city council not to spraying, if everyone's trying to do that, city council, board of supes, and private individuals, but set up a shelter for people where people can go during the spraying who are outside. And Madrigal refused to even take a public position on this. It was amazing. The same thing is true with other city council members as far as I know. I've never heard anybody taking a public position on this. Even the groups that are supporting it, who are meeting tomorrow, I understand there's small meetings tomorrow around this, actually today on this issue. Perhaps if somebody wants to call in and announce when those meetings are, we could hear more about that. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You're listening to Free Radio. It's like quick station identification there, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, the name of the show, Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides the Tape, Mayor Coonerty debating the sleeping ban from Voices from the Village Live production. Louis LaFortune did a show produced by Charlie Phillips about a month ago. We're replaying part of it, and as you can see, I'm not replaying the whole thing. We never get anywhere. It's too long, and I take too long even to talk about it, obviously. But the LBAM discussion is... to me, it also shows the hypocrisy of the city council and the community on this issue, too, their willingness to treat homeless people as unpersons. But they'll use them and say, the homeless are the first people that are going to be hit by this LBAM spray. That's how horrible it is. But if you say, will you demand the city council let them, force them to go, force the city council to set up an indoor area during the periods of time when LBAM will be sprayed? And then suddenly, they say yes, and petitions are being circulated. That is really... at the bottom of the concerns of the LBAM folks. They don't want to antagonize Madrigal and others on this issue. They don't want to hold their feet to the fire Although I have to say a couple of LBAM people did call in, LBAM opponents, LBAM spray, checkmate spray opponents, and said, we're with you, we support you on this, but I haven't heard anything further. And I frankly don't expect to, but who knows? Maybe I'll get a report from Dangerous John Keel King today, who's going to these meetings.
You want to talk about that?
Sought an injunction to stop the spraying in the first instance until they did an environmental assessment that I assume would also include the impact on people sleeping outside.
Opportunity.
We lost the injunction, and now we're suing under the
California Nothing to say about protecting
Act
homeless people
to force that before the next round of suing, or next round of spraying, which will, I think, occur in March or April.
And I didn't check with him to make, but I think we can make this public. Council member Ed Porter contacted me about this, and he's soliciting affidavits. Do you know about this, and do you want to talk about that to support this lawsuit?
I don't. I know that one of the elements of proof when you're talking about the impact would be the impact, the actual impact of the first round of spring, so I assume he's trying to help in gathering evidence on the impact of people.
Well, I'm pretty clear about this, and hopefully Ed Porter's watching tonight, but Ed Porter, a council member, contacted me and told me that he tomorrow, which is a holiday, he is making the Santa Cruz City Council chambers available for people who want to come and, I believe, write a statement that is an affidavit and somehow participate in this lawsuit. So hopefully I have that correct.
Okay.
So there is a lawsuit.
And the
county also has a separate lawsuit, is that correct?
Well, we've been joined as one, so we're
So
partnering up.
So apple moth spraying as a human rights issue and its impact on people without housing.
I do want to point out though that what we should talk about is a lot of the phrases criminalizing homelessness.
Uh-huh.
And that if you work from case numbers or the other numbers of 1,500 homeless people, and we only have...
Notice that Kennedy is completely ignoring Louis LaFortune, the moderator's question. What about the impact of LBAM on the homeless? Maybe he's going off on a riff here. Let's see where he goes with this.
250 beds. I mean, there's 1,250 people who were sleeping without beds on that given night, although...
Actually, there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people and 160 beds. Never mind. There's still a huge discrepancy, even if you take Coonerty's figures.
People who are found somewhere else, you know, a friend asleep on their couch or something along those lines. And we only have between 30 and 60 tickets. So on any given night, there's...
And again, I remind you, it's more like 80 to 100 tickets.
People sleeping outside and 30 are getting tickets. I don't know that there's a massive, and that those tickets are dismissed if the shelters are full. I don't know that there's that we're criminalizing homelessness.
And again, the tickets aren't dismissed if the shelters are full. They are dismissed if the armory is full, which happens less frequently and only a part of the year, and only often under pressure from activists if the activists happen to be fortunate enough to get the information they require, as happened this year. And I'm not going to go into the details of this particularly now, I have in the past, but that's the case. Again, not talking about protecting the homeless from LBAM spray.
Busing people, it's certainly a problem. It's certainly something we can do more about, but I think we should be careful to keep it in perspective.
He's keeping it in perspective by not talking about it, it looks like.
Go back to your comment about how the it is really legally, you're saying, it is the county's responsibility to provide services for the citizens of the county. So how is the county involved? Is the city working with the county? What is the county doing? I don't really know.
Well, I think the county helps fund some of these shelters that we also fund. I think the county has Emmeline Street and provides a variety of health care and social services. I think the county could do more. I think the state could do more. I think the national government could certainly do more, and the amount of money that we get each year is reduced. I think that's a good question. I think our county government is genuinely committed to social services, but like anybody else, they're working in a very constrained budget.
And the issue, again, is being ignored. It's the criminalization of the homeless, not that the county does, but that the city does. But the county also engages in this kind of behavior. Deputies are given the power to harass homeless people sleeping in their vehicles, and do. And that's a significant problem. They don't have the same kind of sleeping ban that Santa Cruz does, which is one of the reasons Santa Cruz is considered one of the meanest cities in this study.
Oh, but I think it's like any law, it's a chicken and egg thing. Do you have the police go around and wait for the impact and then fight the impact, or do you have the people, or do you try to prevent it by saying we don't allow camping outside unless the shelters are full?
Okay, camping outside is a deceptive way of saying, of ignoring what it really is, which is survival sleeping outside. That's point one. Point two, there has never really been a study of the impact of camping. If there had been, Coonerty might be on sounder ground, but I've never heard of any such study ever being done. And then third of all, if you're really concerned about the impact, you go after the impact. You don't go after the basic human need, which is the need to sleep, cover up with bedding, protect yourself from the elements. You acknowledge all these factors. You allow people to do them, but you restrict it in the sense that you say, we have to regulate it so that if you do make a mess in this area, you're responsible for it, and we're going to ticket you. We are going to provide some campgrounds and some car parks for people who need facilities, and some public restrooms, and some porta-potties, and some dumpsters, and some trash services. We'll provide these things because we recognize that not to do so would not only be cruel, but would also be foolish. But we have a foolish city government and a foolish mayor, Ryan Coonerty. Come and tell him so. Bookshop Santa Cruz, 2 o'clock today. About an hour and a half, 2 hours.
So, sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other. I think that you do talk about the impact. I mean, I've been to a run of gulch. I've been up the river. The amount of trash and waste and variety of other things that are coming down our river and our open spaces are significant. And the people of Santa Cruz in the last election voted to increase the number of parks maintenance workers by four more workers. So they're out trying to address this in our open space, because until a year ago we had one ranger covering 2,000 acres.
Indeed. They were talking about Ranger Wallace, who was running around single-handedly destroying tents and creating lots of garbage, which he then hired people to haul away, the labor-ready crews. Now he has four times the force. Actually, it's more like seven times or eight times the force, because not only have additional rangers been hired, but also four additional cops. Three cops, I think, and a sergeant, Sergeant Barry, have been assigned, and I've talked about that. And so I want to correct myself. Wallace put on a demonstration of all the trash that has been left in some of the Greenbelt areas by some campers, although that doesn't in any way constitute a study of what happens to the average camper and whether the average camper should still face the destruction of his campsite, the seizure of his property, the humiliation of him as a person, and a fine or potential imprisonment for camping or sleeping. You're not supposed to be able to get imprisonment for sleeping, but Wallace can give it to you for camping if you are, for example, there with a tent. That is camping, you see, because even if you're covering yourself, it's somehow some sort of despicable, voluntary, volitional act that flaunts the law, or flouts the law, actually. It's abusive propaganda being foisted on the public that created these additional police and ranger services and gives Wallace increased power. Analogously, we have this happening at a national level, where people get power, police agencies, military get power that they should not have. We need saner solutions to these issues, not more power given to cops and wannabe cops.
And so I think it's a concern because people can't use the open space that's meant for people to leave the urban environment and get out into the open space.
Yeah, the main priority for Santa Cruz has to be to allow the community to be able to take their dogs on walks in the open space, you know, to be able to wander about, you know, themselves and enjoy the open spaces without the thought that they're unsightly people who have to sleep there at night because they have no other place to go. In fact, a lot of the despoiling that happened, and I helped clean up some of it. We did a massive cleanup in 1988, attempting to show the community how homeless people really wanted to help. It's sort of like, yazza, yazza, we're the good Negroes. You know, we're going to show we're good people. We're going to do all the things that we're going to help out. And please, sir, please, let us have our civil rights. That doesn't seem to work too well. You know, police officers will turn it into, and rangers like Wallace, who are on their holy crusades, will turn it into a slanderous story, as they did with Homies for the Homeless, making it appear that what is largely a responsible, clean effort is actually a criminal conspiracy, takeover of public property, despoiling of the environment. And as I said before, this whole issue could be addressed very quickly by saying anybody who sleeps or camps in a despoiled area gets cited, like is happening now. And it would actually motivate people not to leave trash. I think that would be, you know, the way to do it, or certainly one way to do it. But that's not what these people want. They want more power to impose their essentially idiosyncratic personal standards on you, regardless of your needs. If you are out there, you know, the actions of a few irresponsible campers or people who, you know, when there's a law that deserves no respect, people have disrespect for the law and often for the environment. And to expect otherwise, I think, is to be unrealistic, though I would urge all campers to camp responsibly. I would urge the city to set up responsible camping programs to show people how to do that, to encourage people to do that, instead of just saying, well, fucking ticket, you asshole, unless you hide out or get out. You know, we'll hire more cops to do it. That's the wrong way to go. More from Mayor Coonerty and his new administration and his program.
This lack of housing and lack of a place to sleep is costing the city additional funds and cleanup.
Louis LaFortune,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it costs us in terms of the San Lorenzo River being polluted and going out into the National Marine Sanctuary. And there's been a river cleanup just earlier this year, and the amount of garbage that people had left in the bushes and that had gone into the river was astounding.
They may have been astounding, and I've certainly got no brief for messy campers, but I don't recall there being any particular finding that Camp Paradise produced more pollution before than after. Camp Paradise is a pretty significant large operation with 60 to 80 campers and more sometimes, along the San Lorenzo River that was attacked strongly by Mayor Fitzmaurice, the great liberal, progressive, Green Party mayor, back in the fall of 2000. 2001, sorry. And that was, so because such a thing wasn't shown then, to claim that there's a sudden huge rise now, I would like to see specific documentation. And I would also like to see some realistic solutions proposed, other than simply beating the bushes to give people tickets and create more forbidden zones.
So on a very basic level here, this is the homeless problem is a financial problem for the city.
This is a moderator.
I don't mean to make sound crass, but for every dollar that's invested then in providing shelter, you're alleviating these other costs.
Yeah, I mean, I think
and environmental costs as well.
And I think that's in part why the city goes out of its way to fund the interstate shelter program, the Riverside shelter program, and then also have long-term solutions of transitional housing.
And this is clearly not true. That is to say, the idea that it wants to stop the environmental degradation by funding shelter programs in a significant way, because they don't fund shelter programs. If they did, they really would have a significant impact. But to say that funding a shelter program where you serve only 5 to 10% of the population is significant is absurd. It's just not true. And therefore, it shows that his argument that, well, that's why we fund this program, so we can stop the environmental degradation. So they don't take environmental degradation very seriously, do they?
Counseling programs, job training programs, all the various things that we offer.
Yeah. We do have a comment from, or a question, from a member of our studio audience, Robert North. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I was banned from the show. In fact, I had to kind of sneak in. We were afraid Coonerty was going to slip out the back door if I came in. He made it a condition of his showing up there that I not be allowed on the panel. So I was allowed to ask a question from the audience.
Doing this, people should know, sort of a full disclosure, that I was banned from this panel by Councilmember Coonerty and also have been banned from his bookstore. And because of the protest we're doing to actually try to get this kind of discussion, which I'm glad Brian is engaging in, going. But I guess the question I have is, let me preface it by saying that it's clear there are places that people can go to sleep legally. There could be campgrounds set up much more cheaply than very expensive shelter and programs and transitional programs. Eugene now has such a program, and Ryan can look into that if he wants. And it's been proposed by homeless activists for decades. Since 1985, Sycamore Grove has been proposed as a place. All kinds of places have been proposed. And the issue is squarely not in the hands of the county and not in the hands of the state, but in the hands of the city council, which is responsible for the sleeping ban law, which says to fall asleep is illegal for 95% of the homeless people tonight, and even after the armory opens for 85% of the homeless. Well, my question is this. I mean, we are protesting in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is the store that Ryan works at. His father was also a big supporter of this ban owns. His sister is involved in the management. We'd like to do something else to persuade the city to change its ideas on this. But frankly, it seems that there has to be a real impact in the pocketbook of the merchants who I think Ryan represents. It's a kind of a special interest pleading that's going on here and has been going on for a number of years. I'd like him to suggest some other alternative that protesters could do, and also to ask whether he is prepared to commit himself this winter to either suspending the camping ordinance in some areas so people can set up campgrounds somewhere, not anywhere, not everywhere, but somewhere, or whether he's willing to at least declare that if they start spraying for the light brown apple moth, he'll open up some public buildings or move to do so, so that during those spraying times, homeless people will be out of the weather. I want to suggest that the council is interested in none of this, and it's going to take very strong action from the community to do anything, but I'd like Ryan to show that I'm wrong here.
Yeah, so right, what I'm hearing, Robert, is you're proposing safe sleeping zones. I think it's one term, a dedicated space. We've talked about this a little bit.
A number of spaces would be needed, but I know areas, it's cheaper to police that way. It makes more sense, and it's obviously a human necessity and probably a legal necessity because otherwise the city is going to be taken into a lawsuit.
So there's a precedent for this. There was a camping area, designated camping area back in 1995 near the Coral Street Shelter, I believe. And I think we have some footage of that. So if you want to show that while we're talking, that'd be great. And the city, I believe, sanctioned this. We don't have it. The city, I believe, sanctioned this, but then somehow the plug was pulled on it. What's the possibility of doing something like that this winter?
This winter? Well, let me answer first. Robert asked what he can do to change the mind. And my argument would be that we have an initiative process in Santa Cruz that requires about 3,000 signatures, and you can put anything you want on the ballot. He can run for city council if he lives into the city. If he had friends who wanted or like-minded people running the city, I think it's a little unfair to have. I run for city council. I state my position on this. He knew it when I was going to get elected. And instead of trying to advocate through the political process, because apparently that's too hard or too cumbersome, he chooses to try to economically blackmail me through my family, as my primary income is not through Bookshop Santa Cruz. So he's choosing to try to inflict economic pain on my sister in order to change my political beliefs, which, while a legal form of political protest, I don't think is a legitimate form of political protest.
A couple of comments here. First of all, Neil Coonerty's father is the owner of the bookstore, along with his sister, as I understand it from his account. He's the chief worker there. And the Bookshop Santa Cruz is a significant business interest in the Downtown Association, which is a political group. And while the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and we've talked about this on the air, does have some significant amenities for the community, which the city should be providing, like a public bathroom, which they don't insist you be a customer to use. Although if you're banned, like I am, you can't even get it. You can't get to it. I've been banned for 13 years from there. 13 years. And others have been banned, too, often for rather thin reasons. I was banned for political reasons. But nonetheless, you know, the small things they do, such as they also have, and not just small things, real things, as a private business, I actually have respect for and I give them credit for. They allow a couple of homeless people to sleep in their eaves sometimes. But the other reality is that they are politicians, and as a family, often, I mean, at least three of them, Sheila Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty, and Neil Coonerty, were, you know, ran for political office, accepted significant political appointments, and some of them seem to be running for higher office. Coonerty's supervisor, the older, Neil Coonerty. And they've supported anti-homeless laws. So I think that it's hardly cowardly to raise the issue of, you know, first of all, trying to talk to Ryan Coonerty. That's why he originally went to the bookshop. He wouldn't talk to us. He continued to stonewall on this issue for month after month. Throughout the years when he's been elected, he was elected back in 2004, I guess it was now, 2004, 2006, one of the two, 2004. And so, you know, it's an attempt to get a dialogue going, which we're going to continue to do when we go to the bookshop at 2 o'clock today, and I invite you to join us there when we're going to be replaying this and talking about it some more, or unless we play something better, which I actually prefer, because I'm really tired of this whole discussion, but it's an important one, you know, and I'm glad if you're listening to it, please feel free to respond to it. Nicole Coonerty, 420-5020, City Council member, 420-5020. Coonerty actually gives his bookshop Santa Cruz number, I believe, or maybe it's a non-council number. Maybe it's his, I don't think it's the bookshop, actually. I think it's his home phone, perhaps. I'm not sure. He gives another number for people to call as well, but you can reach him at 420-5020. The suggestion that we use initiative process or run council members, people have run for city council on this issue, and they've gotten thousands of votes. Thomas Levitt, Steve Argue ran on this issue and other issues. It takes a very, very strong organization. It takes the right in with the right politicians. It takes a lot of money to get into office or even more to get an initiative passed. And we haven't been successful at that. But human rights should not be dependent upon money or upon even the will of the majority. Human rights are human rights. And if certain council members who run businesses downtown, Emily Riley is another person whose business we urge people to boycott the bakery when she initiated legislation against the homeless in 2001 around the Camp Paradise time. She initiated no parking laws at night in Harvey West. We said, boycott her business. Send her a message. Let her know that, you know, we really think, let's talk about this. You won't talk to us otherwise. You've turned your position around. You know, you don't really get rational answers. They sound rational, but they don't have much. They don't address the issues. I don't think he's not really addressing the issues. Not really in a. This is a debate, I suppose, because there are some people on the other side. But he's banned. I think. Well, I'm a significant part of that discussion. And I was banned. He's trying to use extra legal means in his own way. He talks about it's a form of bullying tactics. Which, the whole sleeping ban is a bullying tactic, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But we're doing what we need to do to try to bring the issue to public consciousness. And it is protests and boycotts and marches, not initiatives and city council races that have resulted in sleeping bans being overturned, as well as court action. I notice he didn't suggest we take it to court. He already suggested that one, and we are taking it to court. I guess he's kind of shut up on that issue. Anyway, here's more of his response to my question.
So my argument would be, if you can build a coalition, put it on the ballot, and it'll be voted on by the majority of citizens of Santa Cruz in the next election.
And the other thing is, the next election is a year away. So for a year, people should not be allowed to sleep. You know, people should be criminalized for doing what they have to do every night. But in a year, we'll vote on it. You know, it doesn't make doesn't roll over well with me.
In terms of providing safe sleeping zone, the numbers we're all talking about here, and if we don't want to have anyone criminalized for sleeping in bushes, we're talking about providing a place for 1,200 people to sleep or 1,000 people to sleep on any given night. That's a large space. You have to provide restroom facilities. You have to make sure that it's safe, because once you're sort of once you sort of legalize it or give it that standing, I think people are going to want to work under the assumption that it's a safe place to sleep. That takes an amazing amount of resources. Anyone who's gone through a planning process in the community, say you have to do a full environmental impact report. That costs money. And then the question becomes, because we have eliminated $7 million and 70 jobs from the city of Santa Cruz in the last 7 years, which one of these homeless programs do you want to cut in order to pay for that? And I would argue that these are long-term,
Well, you could deal maybe with the Poganip Clubhouse, or you could deal with some other area where there's a lot of money invested. You know, and again, we're not really asking for huge spaces. We're asking for a suspension of the camping ordinance, which is something he's not talking about. If he wants to do a huge amount of money put into safe sleeping zones, great. But until such time as that actually happens, or until affordable housing happens, those of us who support ending the sleeping ban feel there's no choice other than to say you've got to leave people alone who sleep at night, because that's a basic human right, not just acknowledged by some of us, but by the state constitution, the U.S. Constitution, the UN Declaration of Human Rights. What, the right to sleep is in the Constitution? No, but the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment is, and that's what the federal courts found in the Jones case here in Los Angeles, and it resulted in San Diego, Fresno, and Richmond changing their practices or their laws, and we need to do the same and force the city to do the same in Santa Cruz. So come to support the sleeping ban lawsuit today at 2 o'clock in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz as we continue to listen to this tape. It's actually a CD or a DVD from the Voices from the Village Live show, which Charlie Phillips, Louis LaFortune, and others put together. And thank you very much for doing that.
Solutions, and then also long-term solutions, and that providing a safe sleeping zone is, while it would be helpful, even if you can find a place and if you can provide all the facilities and safety elements, is not as effective as many of these programs. So I'm not willing to do it.
And that's completely ridiculous, because the programs don't deal with shelter. So how can these programs have anything to do with the issue of letting people sleep legally somewhere? In other words, he's saying that campgrounds aren't effective, they cost too much money, they require too much of a budget cut. I'm not demanding, I don't think us were demanding campgrounds, we're suggesting that could be certainly a cheaper alternative than huge amounts of paying middle-class social service workers to show homeless people how to write checks and set up shelter spaces and regulated environments where people have to be gone during the day and have all kinds of rules. Might be a much more sensible alternative. National parks does it, you know. In fact, is it legal? It's legal to sleep in the national parks without even going to a campground, provided you camp legally. It could be done in Santa Cruz in certain areas as well. But we're not getting that proposal from Ryan Coonerty. We're not even getting any consideration of it. Instead, these are unpeople. We don't have to worry about them because the city can't afford it and the merchants don't want it and the residents might vote us out of office and go put it on the next ballot if you're interested.
I think that's for you.
I think we're far and away above. I mean, you can look at some cities are counties, the County of Los Angeles and the City of Los Angeles are one and the same with San Francisco. So I don't think they're comparable because they're able to bring in those federal and state funds. And if you pick any city in a 100-mile radius or anywhere in California, I think you'd see only Berkeley and Santa Monica coming close. And I think per capita, we spend more.
Again, it's an issue of not how much money is spent, but how well it is spent, and whether this particular issue is well addressed, and whether the city should be in the business of violating basic human rights every night for poor people. Something he, a constitutional lawyer, should have something to say about, but unfortunately, because he's chosen a political path, it's coming. So the opposite is coming out of his mouth.
Well, go ahead. I think what this exchange brings out in my mind is something that I have found troubling here for some time, and that is the process by which public decisions are made. It's very hard to get a reasoned dialogue going in Santa Cruz on an issue like this. So I think one of the reasons is because Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz is by no means not alone here, adheres to the minimum requirements of the Brown Act as to notice and so on. It's interesting that the Brown Act, among other things, says the people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have created. If the city of Santa Cruz in its city council is going to take up a new criminal ordinance, whatever it may be, whether it involves homelessness or whether it involves trespassing in parking lots or whatever, typically the notice of that ordinance is going to be available for the public on a Friday afternoon on a matter that will be taken up by the city council on the following Tuesday. We're talking about a day and a half of business time, if you will. So anyone who wants to make any reasoned input on that has 2 or 3 minutes, typically ignored before the city council. If by the second reading, 2 weeks later, they wish to comment again, the city council members typically have made up their mind. I think it would be hard to find a situation in which a city council member changed their vote in the intervening time, and that's all the opportunity there is for public comment. That's not a dialogue, and I think we need that here.
And that's, of course, Zimmerman's really talking about another law, the parking lot panic law, or the parking garage paranoia law, as I called it. He feels rather badly about that, as do I, though I think he was kind of naive about it. That's the law that says you walk into a parking lot, unless you're going through, have a vehicle or car there, you're a criminal, thanks to the Coonerty law. Kind of shows you why it supports the sleeping ban, too. You know, it's just police solutions, clear away people from areas, keep them pristine for those who pay, or the better class of people, or the city employees who work there instead of the whole general community, instead of them being public spaces. In a way, this is really about public spaces, the sleeping ban, because it's about the commons. It's the right to responsibly use the commons. And camping and sleeping, if it's necessary, is a responsible and an important, indeed an essential, use of the commons. That is being denied and punished in Santa Cruz. What Zimmerman's talking about is the fact that he and the ACLU weighed in on this issue last year instead of coming on, you know, with a full argument about how it also impacts homeless people to say that you can't walk into a parking garage unless you have a car there, because he didn't want to use the H word. He got them to remove parking lots from the law, but this year they re-included them. So now, as I've said before, 10 square blocks of space downtown are forbidden territory unless you have a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes, which also goes after homeless people who are living in their vehicles, because it's going to be awfully difficult to park your vehicle, and then you'll be faced with police surveillance if you are there for more than 15 minutes with your vehicle. It's also a gross abuse and imposition on ordinary people. It's sort of like expecting them to do strip searches. I mean, it's outrageous, and I can't. It shows to me how far Santa Cruz has fallen that we have such a law now. And frankly, I'd like to see a challenge of protest if people are interested. Give me a call at the Huff line, 423-HUFF. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is the last hour of Bathroom Spears Broadside, which has turned into a long discussion of essentially 30 minutes of mostly Mayor Coonerty's remarks on the sleeping ban, and mostly not about the sleeping ban, but about homeless services and how we should keep our eye on what wonderful Santa Cruz is for homeless services and ignore what they're doing around criminalizing people with the other hand.
The beginning, I knew we wouldn't get through everything tonight, but it's a thorny issue. Thank you so much for joining all of us. We're going to have to leave it there.
Thank you.
And good night from Voices from the Village. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
And that was the show. My thanks again to Charlie Phillips and Louis LaFortune and all the other folks at Community TV who made this possible. You want to hear and see the whole thing, go to humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com or indymedia.org/Santa Cruz, or just Google for Voices from the Village Sleeping Band. You'll probably find it there, and you'll be able to see the thing, which is posted online. Thank you very much by Tim Rumford, who did a great job and who also made these clips. And my apologies to Charlie Phillips if he's offended by any of this. I don't know. I mean, I'm I don't want to be hypocritical and say I apologize, and I find it kind of ridiculous that he's offended. But let's say we have a different view on this stuff, and you know, let's leave it at that. Again, if you want to hear it again, or if you want to hear or see the film Berkeley in the 60s, which is what I'm going to be proposing as an alternative to play on the sidewalk down at Bookshop Santa Cruz. And but we're going to be playing it legally, by the way. It is legal to play a television or radio on the sidewalk at normal volume, and that's what we're going to be doing. So, you know, it's not going to be blasting real loud. It's going to be at a reasonable volume. We're going to be encouraging people to realize that they have the right to resume, to restore, to reclaim their liberties.